Welcome, everybody. Hope everybody had a good sit at the beginning here. Are you hearing a lot of background noise from me? Fabulous. Having some AC issues, and so it's blowing really, really loud. So I wanted to make sure it wasn't interfering. Fabulous. Cool. So I've been doing a lot of reading and studying on compassion lately. And the last time I talked, we talked about self-compassion and we talked about what Dr. Kristen Neff has been researching. And after going back and reviewing what we talked about and what some questions were, I decided that we should do part two, which is the fierce compassion component. And we talked a little bit about it last time, but we're going to go more in depth on it this time. So get comfortable. And let's talk about the myth of compassion, if you will. A lot of times when people think about compassion, they think we're weak. Oh, you're a pushover. You're too kind. You're too giving. And it's always outward focused. And last chat we talked about self-compassion and how that's a big part of the metta tradition, loving kindness. So think about for a moment, when you hear the word compassion, what images come to mind for you? For most people, it will conjure up warmth, gentleness, kindness, open arms, a comforting parent or a comforting adult, a soft blanket, a soothing voice telling us that everything's going to be okay. And I have to smile with the soft blanket part. My wife works from home, and occasionally some of her staff will come to our house and work because they're working on a project together and they all work remote. And one of them always comes in, sees I'm a blanket person, sees my very soft blanket on the love seat, picks it up, takes it over to the other desk that's by my wife's desk. And has it there should she get chilled or just want to hold on to it. And I've noticed it for a while, months. She comes to our house all the time. So I finally got her one. So she had her own. I'm like, it's not that you can't use mine, but perhaps you want to take this one home with you. So you have one at your house and you can still use mine at my house. Because to her, that was comforting. I don't know what it brought up for her from her childhood or from her life or whatever, but from whatever that texture is of my blanket and what it meant to her was compassion and love. And that's how she described it to me. She said, I feel like I'm wrapped in love when I have your blanket here and I'm working. And that was fabulous to hear. I mean, how great is it to hear that something we did inadvertently. I had a blanket in my house. I didn't plan on anything, but I had it. She could felt comfortable enough to use it, and to her it was love. Well, Dr. Neff looks at that type of compassion as tender compassion. It's the yin. It's the yin energy. It focuses on acceptance. It focuses on nurturing, emotional healing. It's the crucial ability to turn inward when we are hurting and say, I see you are in pain and I am here for you. And that's what we talked about when we talked about self-compassion. We also talked about the fact that if it's only tender, it becomes passive. It becomes a form of compliance where we accept bad situations under the guise of being kind. That true, complete compassion requires a second component. It's equally as important as the tender compassion. It needs the yang to the yin. And Dr. Neff calls that fierce compassion. It is action-oriented. We just barely touched on this in the self-compassion talk, where we talked about setting boundaries was one way to have that fierce compassion. It's a willingness to also look at harm, injustice, or self-sabotage and loudly declare, no, this is not okay, and this must stop. For years, I was really good at self-sabotage. Really good at it. Could have been my second job, right? I would set myself up to fail at things. And I finally had to say enough. The only person stopping me is me. And I'm good enough to do this. Meditation teaching is one of those things. Now, I had help from Leslie saying, you really should do this. I really need you to do this. You really could do this. And some other people. But I had that little voice going, yes, it's you can do this. I've been meditating for a really long time. And I always wanted to teach it. But I kept saying, I'm not good enough at this yet. I don't know enough about it yet. I'm an academic at heart. I read a lot. I study a lot. It's almost like I thought I had to be perfect at understanding all the components. Well, you can't understand all of them for meditation. Peter will tell you he's been practicing and studying for years and he's still learning. Leslie will tell you the same thing. So I self-sabotaged for years until I finally said to myself, enough. Move on that path. Take that step. I made it not be complacent anymore, and I took movement forward. I took the action for myself. So you've got the yin, tender, the yang, action-oriented, or fierce. Another example is the mama bear. Look at nature, bears, dogs, cats, whatever you want to look at. And think about how a mother animal is with her, and for bears, their cubs, or puppies, for dogs, kittens, etc. They're very nurturing, they're caring, they watch over, they're cleaning them, they're cuddling them, they're gentle. But what happens if a predator comes near? They're not gentle anymore. They become fierce. A mother bear, a mother dog, a mother cat will become very protective. In my household are three dogs. One of them is female. She had her first litter of puppies at the end of February. She was raised by one of our other dogs, the oldest guy. She's known him. She loves him. She cuddles with him. She sleeps where she can touch him. But when she had those puppies and he wanted to see what all that noise was, she very quickly stood up, bared her teeth, and growled at him. And he was 6 feet away from the whelping box. He wasn't right on it. And she knew him. But to her, doesn't matter. These are my puppies. I don't trust you with my puppies. And that's the fierce compassion. Not only am I going to be gentle with you, I'm going to attend to you, I'm going to comfort you, but when I need to protect you, I'm going to be fierce. I'm going to set that boundary of Don't come any further. I'm protecting. And that is the essence of fierce compassion. It is love in action. The mama bear, the mama pup, the mama dog does not offer gentle, soothing words to the threat. She stands on, and the bear stands on their hind legs. The dog stood up immediately. Didn't matter that puppies were nursing. Stood up immediately, leaned forward, got that chest out, bared the teeth, and growled, giving notice, saying, don't take another step. Was she being aggressive out of hatred? No. Neither was the mama bear. It was fierce love. Fierce love. Now, life sometimes doesn't give us fierce love at home. Some of us may have had horrible home lives, but we found fierce love elsewhere, or we provide fierce love to others. But we have to provide fierce love to ourselves also. The essence of fierce compassion, when you practice it, is that you become your own mother bear. Dr. Neff's research breaks self-compassion into three core components: the self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. We talked about this a little last time, and they sound soft, but when you infuse them with the fierce energy, they're different. So let's start with fierce self-kindness versus tender self-kindness. Tender self-kindness is, for example, I had a terrible day. I'm going to wrap myself in a blanket. I'm going to open a pint of Ben and Jerry's. I'm going to put on a movie or a favorite streaming TV show, and I'm going to comfort myself. Can you tell I like ice cream? Just saying. Fierce self-kindness sounds like I'm being mistreated in this situation. The kindest thing I can do for myself is pack my bags or draw a line or speak up. Depending on the situation, depends on what you may choose. It's protective. You're protecting yourself. It prioritizes your safety and long-term well-being over short-term comfort. It's hard to do for ourselves. Think for a minute if you've ever told any of your friends or loved ones, you need to get out of that situation. That's not a healthy situation. You need to speak up. Does any of that sound familiar? I know I've said that to people. We have to be willing to say it for ourselves. Tender self-kindness, fierce self-kindness. Let's talk about the humanity side. Tender, common humanity sounds like I'm not alone in my suffering. Others feel this grief too. It connects us to our vulnerability. It lets us know we are not alone. Fierce, common humanity sounds like my suffering matters just as much as anyone else's. It prevents you from subjugating your needs to appease others. It reminds you that humanity includes you. I'm going to say that again, because when I first read that, I stopped. And I must have read that line six times. It reminds you that humanity includes you. You have a right to stand up for yourself. just as you would stand up for a friend. You have a right to say, I can't do that event. I need to take a break. I need some downtime. That may not sound like a harsh boundary, but disappointing other people can feel that way. But taking care of yourself and saying, I have to protect myself, is something we have to do. I've talked to you all before about the fact that I have some autoimmune issues. I have to set boundaries. It took a long time for me to be okay doing that and not feel like I was letting people down. I had a right to set those boundaries and stand up for myself. So let's talk about the mindfulness aspect. Tender mindfulness is, I'm noticing a waving of anxiety right now. I will sit with it. It validates the present moment. Fierce mindfulness sounds like I'm cutting through the illusions and seeing the truth of this situation clearly. It is the clarity required to notice when you're being taken advantage of or when your own habits are harming you without blinking or looking away. I have a chocolate problem. Freely admit it. I can remember as a teenager getting one of those cans at the grocery store of the frosting, and it was chocolate frosting. I'd put it in the fridge and I'd go get a spoon and occasionally go get a spoonful of chocolate frosting, eat it, and keep walking. That was as a kid. I still have a chocolate problem. However, with my autoimmune stuff, I can't have a lot of sugar. I had to stand up for myself and pay attention to my own habits that were harming me. My eating chocolate in excess, instead of having a piece, I would have three, which might turn into six. And I would rationalize it that it was really good dark chocolate. Doesn't matter. Still too much for me to have. And, you know, I'd have the same stuff the next day and I'd end up in a flare-up. And it was because of what I was eating. That's my habit harming me. I was harming myself. So my mindfulness had to change from, I need to sit with why I'm doing this, to, I need to recognize what I'm doing is harming me. So it's that added step. So the three core components, the fierce self-kindness, fierce common humanity, fierce mindfulness. We're going deeper than the tender side, and it's all directed at us. So how do you express those compassionate components in daily life? Protecting, providing, and motivating. Let's start with protecting. This is the saying no part. I just talked about this when I said I had to say no to boundary, to going to do things and setting boundaries and telling friends no. It's preventing others from crossing your physical, emotional, or professional lines. It's an act of love for yourself that prevents harm. That's the protecting part. Providing. Giving yourself what you truly need, not just what you want in the short term. I wanted the chocolate every day, and not just one piece. One piece seemed like a waste. But the long term is I want to be able to play with the four-year-old grandson, to hang out with the teenage grandsons. Can't do that if I'm in a flare-up. I'm in a flare-up if I'm eating poorly. That's one of the things that feeds my autoimmune stuff. I have to watch what I eat. So I have to protect myself and provide for myself. for not just the short-term right now want of that really good piece of dark chocolate. And think about, what do I need for the long term? So tender compassion might want another glass of wine or another couple of pieces of chocolate, whereas the fierce compassion will step in and say, nope, what you really need, glass of water, you need some rest, finish that application, set that boundary. That's taking care of myself for the long term, not just the short term. So we've talked about protecting, that's the setting boundaries and saying no. We've talked about providing, which is giving yourself what you truly need, not just what you want for the short term. And now motivation. Traditional motivation relies on the inner critic, shaming us into doing better. Anybody have one of those critics? I've had one. Yeah. Fierce compassion motivates through encouragement. It's the coach who believes in you, pushes you to your limits and says, you're capable of more than this. Let's get up and try again. I have a great example of this. I grew up being a perfectionist. And there were times when I wouldn't even try things because I didn't think I could do them right. For 30 years, I've been with somebody whose entire ethos of life is, let's try that. One great example, I'm Southern, right? My parents are from North Carolina. I was raised with very specific ethnic foods and such and cultural things, as it's my wife. And she wanted to learn to make homemade buttermilk biscuits from scratch. I'm like, fabulous. This sounds great. I like biscuits. One Saturday morning, and I am not exaggerating, I promise, she made 11 different variations of buttermilk biscuits, and I had to taste test every one. 11 different batches of biscuits. I would have given up on the first one if it wasn't what I was wanting it to be. She thought, oh, okay, so I'll try that. You thought it was this? Okay, let me do this different. And just kept going. And that taught me so much about how it's okay to try something different that you're not comfortable with. And I can try it and get up and do it again and try again. I didn't have to be perfect. I could learn and try again. And why I thought I would know how to do it right away, I don't know. Because I know from my life, if I look back, I didn't learn how to play piano by sitting down one time. It takes a while, meditating. Did you learn how to meditate the very first time you sat down? Did you feel comfortable and confident? And I'm the best meditator in the world now? No. None of us did. But we can get up and try again. We start again. As Sharon Salzberg says, when we catch ourselves, we begin again. Right? We go back to the breath. It's the same thing. It's that motivation of trying again. It's fierce. So we're balancing the yin and the yang, which allows us to ensure our compassion has both the soft heart with a strong backbone. We're still soft-hearted, but it's action-oriented when it's fierce compassion. I'd like us to try a brief 6 to 8 minute short meditation to try this, if you're willing. Get yourself comfortable. If you're more comfortable with your camera off, that is perfectly fine. If you're more comfortable laying down, standing, whatever works for you, center yourself. Either close your eyes, lower your gaze, and take three deep, grounding breaths. In, hold it, let it go. And the second one, in, hold it, blow it out. And your third one, in, hold it, let it out. Feel the support of the chair, couch, cushion beneath you. Feel where your body's touching. Bring your awareness fully into the present room. Now bring to mind a recent minor struggle. Could be a difficult interaction or a self-critical thought. Place a hand over your heart or your belly or wherever it feels comforting to you. Feel the physical warmth of your hand and gently say to yourself, "This hurts. I see that I am struggling right now." Let that validation land for you. Now pivot your attention to the boundary you need to set in this situation. Straighten your spine slightly. Pull your shoulders back. Feel the strength, the stability, and dignity in your posture, and connect with your inner power. And in your mind, declare a clear, unyielding boundary regarding this particular struggle. Use words like, "No, I will not accept this." Or, "I need to protect my peace." Do not say it with hatred for others, but with an unconditional fierce love for yourself. And let the energy of that boundary fill your chest. Now imagine a protective shield of light around you. It allows love to flow out, but stops any harm, disrespect, or exhaustion from entering. Take a few deep breaths into this space. Breathe in strength, breathe out resolve. You are the protector of your own life. Now take one more deep stabilizing breath. Wiggle your fingers and toes. Bring your awareness back to your surroundings and slowly open your eyes. Dr. Neff looks at self-compassion, both tender and fierce, as a theoretical framework that one can put into action. She's studied this for years. Sometimes it's hard to figure out how to move from theory to action. Understanding the theory of fierce compassion can feel empowering in this room, but the real test is going to begin tomorrow when you step back into your normal routine. When your boss asks you to work late on a Friday, or when a family member boundary stomps, or when your inner critic starts shouting at you, that's when fierce compassion matters. So what can we do? There's three strategies you can use over the next 7 days. Strategy one, I like to call the draw the line daily audit. So as we've talked about, fierce compassion requires self-awareness. And there's a lot of times we give away our peace in tiny, really unnoticed increments throughout our day. The daily audit is designed to help us catch that. Almost like we're catching the leaks, if you will, of where those little tiny boundaries get stomped on for our peace. So I'd like if you could think about trying every evening for the next 7 days, take 2 minutes, open up a journal or a notes app on your phone and answer two simple questions. The first is, where did I say yes today when my gut was screaming no? So where did I say yes when my gut was screaming no? And the second, what did it cost me? And that could be sleep, time with friends, kids, grandkids. Did it cost you emotional energy, peace of mind? What did it cost you? Once you identify the leak, you can script your correction for the next time. So in other words, don't beat yourself up for missing the boundary when it happens, when you notice the leak. That's the tender compassion coming in where we say to ourselves, it's okay. We use fierce compassion to say, what am I going to do next time? What's my action? How am I protecting my peace? Write down what you're going to do next time, or what are you going to say if there's a request that came in that stomped on a boundary of yours, or if a situation arose. Go ahead and script it out. What do you wish you would have said that you didn't that time? You're giving yourself a chance to practice by writing it out. So that's the draw the line daily audit. Finding the leak. Where did I say yes when my gut was saying no? And then what did it cost me? Scripting out what you wish you had done, what you will do next time. Strategy number two is the fierce compassion mantra. So when we're caught off guard, our brains naturally default to people pleasing or compliance to avoid conflict. Sometimes we need, think about it being an automated circuit breaker to stop that reflex. So I'm going to give you a three-part mantra. If you can memorize it this week, that's great. Repeat it mentally whenever you feel your boundaries are being threatened. So first, we're going to validate the stress by saying, this is a moment of pressure. That's tender mindfulness. We're aware. It acknowledges that setting boundaries causes real internal anxiety. You aren't broken for feeling scared or anxious. You're human. So this is a moment of pressure. Number two, we're going to reclaim our right to protect ourselves. This is where our fierce common humanity comes in. And the phrase here is, my peace matters just as much as their comfort. And this works because we're shattering the illusion that we have to s set ourselves on fire to keep other people warm. It's leveling the playing field. My peace matters just as much as their comfort. And three, we're standing tall. The phrase is, may I have the courage to say no? And this works because it's anchoring our body and mind into a protective stance, shifting from passive to active protector. So we started with, this is a moment of pressure. My peace matters just as much as their comfort, and may I have the courage to say no? So that's the mantra, that's strategy number two. The third strategy I call clean boundaries. When I first started practicing this, I found myself softening my boundaries with endless excuses, saying things like, I'm incredibly sorry. I would love to help you move your couch or help you move into your new apartment. My back's been hurting. I can't do that this time. We might have said something like, I can't drive you to that appointment. I'm so sorry. My car's in the shop. Can't attend because I have a Zoom meeting. There's a lot of things we make those kind of excuses for by softening our boundary. Instead, at work, one of the things I worked on practicing was I cannot take that project on right now while maintaining the quality of my current work. Setting a boundary, giving a rationale. Nothing was an excuse. It was real. In my personal life, when I would have to say no to friends because I wasn't feeling well, I couldn't go to someone's wedding. I'm like, I'm not available to do that. I hope it goes really well. I hope you guys have a great time. Hope you have a wonderful honeymoon. Couldn't go. I had to do that with my oldest. She got married. It was during COVID. I have an autoimmune issue. Couldn't fly on a plane to Minnesota in the middle of winter for a wedding where I knew people weren't going to mask up then. I love my kid immensely. Couldn't do it. I zoomed in instead. What about if you have somebody really intrusive in your world? Asking you questions you feel uncomfortable about because they're too personal and you don't know them that well. What about saying something like, I'm not comfortable discussing that topic. Let's talk about something else. And Jim just posted in the chat, this is great about Phoebe's comment on friends. I wish I could, but I don't want to. And that's great. Clear, honest, and there. Remember, no is a complete sentence. A boundary is not an insult to the other person, it is a statement of truth about your capacity. It took me a long time to learn that. So, as we wrap up today, I hope you remember that anger's not the enemy. It's simply a smoke detector telling you someone's trying to burn your house down, basically. Fierce compassion takes the energy of that anger and channels it into love-driven protection rather than hatred. Setting boundaries will feel intensely uncomfortable at first. I'm going to say that again. When you're setting boundaries, it's really uncomfortable. Your brain will tell you you're being mean. You're not. Remember the mother bear. You need to protect yourself because it's an act of deep kindness to both you and the people around you. Thank you. Thank you for your practice. Questions, comments, concerns, feel free. That was a lot.
Susan. Yeah, thank you so much, Susan, for that presentation. And while you were talking, I was reflecting on my personal practice and the time that I've been able to spend with all of you teachers here and other teachers that teach the Buddhist practice and mindfulness, and how important it is in our lives to be able to cultivate sapajjana, clearly knowing. So when these times come up, we're able to transform a reactivity into a responsiveness, which I recently heard is a great definition for mindfulness. And that's what I was thinking when you were talking. And I've been practicing that, and it feels so much better. It feels so much better. I haven't had a serious situation where I had to set a boundary like you were describing since I left Orlando. But I had to chuckle. I don't remember what you called it or what Dr. Ness called it. But it was one of the ones where you said you pack your bags and get out. And that's exactly what I did. And a lot of people would not have done that. But I was in a condo that I had bought or was purchasing, and squirrels got in the attic. And the HOA would not move on it. And I couldn't do anything. I could not until they sealed up the areas where the squirrels were getting in. I couldn't get the squirrels out. And I had to, and it was somewhat heartbreaking at the time and stressful because I thought I was going to live here for a long time. But I can't live here with these squirrels in the attic. And I don't want to fight. I don't want to spend my retirement in a lawsuit with the COA. That's not what I want to do for my retirement. I've had a couple lawsuits in my lifetime, and I really just, that's not what I wanted to do. I did consult an attorney, but I was like, no. So that's when I just said, you know what? My daughter lives in Colorado. I'd rather be closer to her, and made the decision. Put the house on the market, got it sold in 30 days, and I was out of there.
And not deal with squirrels.
And but
Sometimes
anyway, I had to kind of chuckle because you had said you pack your bags and get out.
you have to do that because it was the example at work that sometimes you're in a situation and you just need to leave that situation. And whether it's the squirrels in the attic or it's a toxic work environment, a toxic relationship, sometimes you just have to say, I gotta go. This doesn't work for me anymore.
And I try to do it, and what has helped me so much too with the practice is to do it with loving kindness. I mean, not scream at anybody, not get in an altercation, just this is it. And developing that practice of clearly knowing really helps.
Yeah,
Really helps.
it takes work and it's good to develop the practice
Hi.
I want peace. I'm protecting my peace. It's not out of hatred. I need to protect me. And so this doesn't work.
Right. Anyway, so thank you. I've been listening to her audiobook since you've started this. I did listen to your presentation online the other day because I wasn't present, but and I've been reading her audiobook or listening to it.
Yeah,
Very good.
she's got some great work. So I'm glad you're doing that. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Good to
Yep.
see everybody.
Leslie, you have something you want to share?
Unmute, Leslie.
Yeah, I do have something to share, but I'm kind of embarrassed.
Right.
This has been very helpful for me as a person who has notoriously broken every boundary that she thought she wanted to set in her life, or it's just been a big issue in my life. So I do appreciate so much. And I keep reading this over. I love the mantras. This is a moment of pressure. My peace matters just as much as their comfort. May I have the courage to say no? So here's my issue. I get asked to do a lot of things. I don't know why, really, that is, but it seems kind of remarkable to me sometimes how many times I'm asked to do things. Now, my mission is in life is to be beneficial. That's I mean, just to sum it up in one little sentence, that's kind of it. And so I've really been working on this for about the last decade, and I'm beginning to make a little bit of progress. But I want to ask about the first part of the mantra. This is a moment of pressure. What happens to me, and this is what I meant about being embarrassed, is that I think I get confused. I get flattered by the request is what happens. That's kind of embarrassing to say that. But it's like I'm think, oh my gosh, they think I'm worth doing that. That's so cool. You know, so I can't be mindful. I think it's an issue of mindfulness in the moment to say, instead of saying, can I have 30 minutes? Give me a little bit of time to think about that. Or let me look at my calendar or something like that. Usually what I end up saying is, yes, I'd love to do that. And I don't say it when I wouldn't want to do it, but you get to a point in life where you have to start saying no to things.
Yeah, and it's a great ego stroke when people want you to do things.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
I mean, it's fabulous when somebody, I used to get asked all the time by a lot of different colleges to build curriculum programs for them for graduate and undergraduate. And I've built programs internationally, and was fabulous. And it was really hard to step away from work. I was very worried, what was I going to do when I wasn't working anymore? Because I liked that people wanted me to do that. And so I filled that by creating talks, right? Like this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not. Surprisingly, I thought it wasn't going to be enough. And occasionally I'll look at the want ads and go, oh, that looks like an interesting place to teach. I could teach that online. And oh, I know somebody who works there. I could just send them a quick email and blah, blah, blah. And I've had people reach out since I retired. And I have to step back and go, no. Because I know what will happen. I will say yes, and I will say yes, and I'll say yes, and my health suffers.
Yeah.
And so takes a lot for me to go push the computer away from that email, just walk away from it for a couple of minutes, and come back and go, I really appreciate the offer, but right now I can't do that. And and that's the first time I did that, I said, right now I can't do that. And my wife pointed out, you gave yourself an out
Yeah.
because you said right now, instead of saying I've fully retired.
Yeah.
And she was right. It was one of those soft excuses. Right
Yeah,
now I
that's a
can't.
good point. Yeah. I
And
recognize that.
I was like, did I really? And yeah. And I'm like, you're right, I did.
Yeah. Well, I think for yeah, that's so good. I'm really loving those three lines, and I'm thinking for me, I need to figure out some way. What I'm not allowing myself to do is recognize the moment of pressure. I think I'm letting ego or delight in being requested, by somebody
Ego.
overpower my sense of pressure of, well, what would this actually do to your calendar?
Right.
What would actually your week be like if you say yes to one more thing?
What would it do to your contemplative lifestyle you are
Right,
for
right,
yourself?
right, right, right.
Where are you going to shortchange yourself?
Yeah.
What is it going to cost you? That other question. Where
Yeah.
did my boundary leak? And
Yeah.
what's it going to cost me? And
Yeah.
what's my script going to be?
I think in order, I'm thinking now, in order for me to actually feel the moment of pressure, I need to get some space. I need to become more skilled in putting some space between the request and my need to answer immediately. So I think that's wise advice you say about giving yourself some time.
Peter.
Leslie, what does it feel like in your body when that happens? And how can you release that in your body? That's one of the ways to modify that kind of process with compassion.
Yeah, I think that I do. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. My concern, though, I mean, my pattern, I think, as I've been watching it, is that something, it's not until I get back to my desk and start putting things on the calendar, and I see the way the calendar is filling up, that's when I feel my body. That's when I feel the tension or the pressure. But I didn't feel that soon enough. Or
Right.
maybe I'm,
That's why
yeah, I
it's
don't.
good to have that I built that into myself a long time ago, my private practice and my life, that I would get an email from somebody or a phone call, and there'd be this urgent need to react.
Yes,
Did right
yes,
away,
yes.
but I decided that I'm going to let it kind of metabolize, simmer
Yeah.
inside. And the best kind of simmering comes from a quiet place, not a place of urgency and feeling pressured. Gotta make that decision. Gotta just let it go. Do something else. Answer the email tomorrow. You know,
Yeah, that's such a good
particularly
point,
when
and that's.
there seems to be some demand coming in from that.
Yeah, and that then just makes me kind of rethink the second mantra that Susan gave us, that my peace matters just as much as their comfort. And it's interesting, I thought when you first said that and I was writing it down, I thought we could put a lot of different words in addition to comfort there, like my peace matters as much as their need or their urgency for me to fulfill a request. That would be another smooth move for me to layer into that second line.
Oh, I'd like to comment about your presentation. You asked the question at the beginning about what comes to mind. Think about compassion. To me, it's connection. It's a feeling of inclusion, non-separation. And there's warmth there and so forth and so on. And a quality of generosity, of giving something, being helpful. But in ways that are respectful, we have what are called external and internal locus of control issues. Outer boundaries, interpersonal boundaries, and intrapersonal boundaries. And it's important to be aware of that. And the other thing I wanted to say is that the issue about the blanket, you were talking about it. I think that you have that blanket because it's compassion for you. Soft, it's reassuring, it's a security blanket.
It is.
And I am sure that this person who pops into your house every once in a while notices this, right?
I don't
And
think she's
so,
ever seen me with it.
huh?
I don't think she's ever seen me use it because it's hanging off the back of the love seat, which is where I sit in the evening.
Well, I just had this assumption, and this goes to the notion of interconnectedness. Somehow or other, she wants what you have. Whatever peace vibe she picks up from you, right? And that blanket is a token of that. And so giving her the blanket as an act of compassion, I think is very important in that regard. The other thing I wanted to say about setting boundaries, fierce boundaries, is that it's important to recognize that when another person is misbehaving, they're suffering. And if my interaction with them tends to feed that kind of exchange, not only is it compassionate for me to pack up and leave, it's compassionate because they won't play that with me right then, or perhaps going forward. So their issue of suffering is not going to be, I'm not going to play in that. I'm not going to be a contributor to that for their sake as well as mine. I think that goes back to that notion of we're all in this together. It's that sense of interbeing that I alluded to early on. So I noticed that John had his hand up. So, John, you want to make a comment?
I just wanted to mention that I think it's an everyday lesson that you have to learn how to apply for yourself. At least that's what my experience has been with the sitting, that I can forget what the knowledge of this conversation has in a blink, and then I go back to an old habit. So it's important to stay aware and to keep including yourself in the conversation with others and not make it one-sided. So that's all.
And Satish?
I'm a thought for Leslie, and I'm wondering, let's say Leslie has made up has agreed to do what was asked of her. How would she feel like if later she said, sorry, I'm too busy? And relieve herself of that responsibility that she just took on. What's wrong with that?
Did you hear that, Leslie?
Yeah, I did. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, except unless you're a what am I, Peter? A people pleaser. You know? I mean, that I think that sometimes I think that's I,
Yeah, but I don't think that's what Nisha is saying, though. I
oh.
think what you're saying is you can change that.
Right. Once you realize that you've taken on too much.
Oh, you mean after the fact that I've said yes, you mean?
Just wondering.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a skill I'm still working on at this ripe old age I'm in. So
That's all. That's all I have to say.
I want to say one other thing, Peter. I know you want to, it's time to close up, but the sound tonight is perfect. I can hear everybody in the room better. I can hear you better. And the last few times it's been very challenging. So what did you do? No, oh my
We have
God.
always done.
Oh, it's a
Trust me,
there's a
I have
ghost.
followed this through, and I really don't know what's going. My fantasy assumption is that there's a lot of disruption going on in the internet world right now, programmers and so forth and so on, and a lot of things that used to work pretty well, they don't work so well in it right now. And that might be one of them, that the whole issue of the intersection or the interaction between the Zoom program and whatever program is running in my computer, in terms of the Microsoft setup, that may be variable according to what's going on in the World Wide Web. But you have to deal with it. I mean, that's just the way it operates.
Well, it was very nice. The audio was really nice tonight, so.
And Peter, before you sign us out, Jim's been typing in the chat, which folks in the room can't see. But I mentioned earlier the Phoebe on Friends comment, but he also mentioned that he has the urge to reread Ayn Rand's The Virtue of Selfishness, which I've not read, so I'm now adding it to my must-read list. And then he just mentioned that the discussion is also reminding him of Harry Brown's How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, a Handbook for Personal Liberty, which has a major theme about stop organizing your life around what other people expect from you, identify what you actually want, and pursue your own happiness without assuming that doing so requires exploiting anyone else. And he goes on to talk about Brown's argument was kind of an enlightened selfishness, where you pay attention to other people's wants because voluntary cooperation and exchange can help both of you, not because you have a moral obligation to subordinate your life to theirs. One later discussion of Brown nicely summarizes it as enlightened selfishness is sensibly sociable.
Oh, I love that. That's
So
fabulous.
there's a teaching story in the Buddhism. It involves a couple who have an act that they take from town to town of a balance beam. Person on the bottom holds this beam. The other person climbs on up to the top of the beam and does all kinds of fancy balancing tricks. So they say to the Buddha, "We have a conflict. My opinion is that if I pay attention to the person at the top of the pole and make sure they're right, then I'll be right in the bottom." And the other person says, no, I think if I take care of myself on the top of the pole and the other person takes care of themselves in the bottom of the pole, everything will be right. What do you think, Buddha?" And the Buddha opted for the second one. Is that informed? Using the word selfish seems counterintuitive, counterproductive. It's more an awareness of how selfing operates. As to go back to what you were saying earlier, it's like a cost-benefit analysis to be really monetary about it. I'm going to do this and I'm going to lose my balance, and there'll be a payoff for that. Do I really want to do this? Whatever it is. So you're going to talk to us next week too, right, Susan?
I am. Y'all have to hear me 2 weeks in a row. Next week we are talking about is mindfulness enough?
I'm looking forward to that.
It'll be interesting.
Yes. So, as is our custom, let's sit together for a brief period in silence. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well, and I hope that we're all reasonably safe and happy till the next time we have a chance to chat.